And I'm a master's student in the aquatic ecology group in the David Attenborough building. And like Jessa, we're on the same program that's called Seafood for Societal Health. It's quite niche, but very interesting. And I look at seafood and fish and seafood during pregnancy for breastfeeding mothers and for young children. Less so the science of what it does when you eat it, but more the public opinion around it and current eating habits. And I got into this research because I'm very interested in fish and marine biology and aquatic life. But I think as I went through studying in university, I found I was always drawn to much more people-focused projects. I like things with context. I like things that affect people's everyday lives. And for me, that is food. Food is a huge part of every day. So I wanted to keep in the fish and marine environment, but also using the idea of food. And I do think the more I read the papers and the more I get into it, that fish and seafood is such like a diverse topic that's often talked about a bit less than meats or a bit less than other protein sources. So yeah, that's what I like doing. Let Jessica go.
I think Meg did an outstanding work of introducing the two of us. So thank you, Meg, for that. I've actually included a slide or two of really what my big motivations are in the study that we're currently undertaking. But yeah, we're just really grateful to have to be part of this, global food security here in Cambridge. And a little bit about my background, I actually finished marine biology. And then I did a master's in conservation leadership, and kind of like what Meg was leading into, like it's kind of really hard. It's just very much woven in there when we talk about the environment and we talk about food. There's just no way that you can separate the two. So I really look forward to the discussions today.
Wonderful. Thank you both. Would you like to start? I'm recording and you have the right to present your slides.
Okay, so should I go first, Jessa? Probably leads through that way. How do I share my screen up there? And can you see that? Yep. I'm just going to present my research so far. So as I said, I'm a one-year master's student, which runs January to January. So I'm in my final few months, bringing all together what I've been looking at for the last year. And my overall topic and title is the role of fish and seafood in the first 1,000 days of life. So 1,000 days of life, that refers to the time from a child's conception through to their second birthday. And that, if you like the maths, is very neatly, pretty much almost exactly 1,000 days. And in this period, as you can imagine, you go from being just a couple of cells through to being a small person. This growth requires a huge jump and change of nutrient demand for both the mothers when they're pregnant or if they're breastfeeding, but also the diet of the young child will then like lay the foundations for the health throughout their life. And beyond that, eating habits have been shown to really change, and what you eat as a very young child will affect the rest of your life. Things like introducing common allergens safely at a young age is really important, and all these things that can happen before a child's second birthday around diet and nutrition are really, really important. I'm interested in that and interested in what we're doing in the UK. So I've only got a one-year project, so I decided to focus on the UK here at home and what we're doing around meeting this nutritional demand. So in the UK, preconception care is very well publicized, but not very well adhered to. So here in at home, 45% of pregnancies are unplanned or unexpected or met with feelings of unexpected pregnancies. And this means that a lot of people either don't know they're pregnant until a bit later on or aren't expecting it, and so aren't looking after their health in maybe the way that is recommended before they're pregnant. So you're supposed to take folic acid, for example, up until folic acid supplements up until 12 weeks of pregnancy. So only 20% of women report taking them, and many women don't take them at all. either because they don't know they should be taking them, they haven't accessed the services that are available, or there's just a lack of knowledge, lack of accessibility, lack of trust. Whatever reason, people aren't getting the nutritional needs met. This is really important because folic acid can help reduce risk of neural tube defects and all sorts of other things that can have lifelong effects on a child. In the UK, we also supplement for vitamin D. So I have read these papers and talked to people about how there is this nutritional demand that isn't always being met in this period. And I'm looking specifically at how seafood could help improve and support health outcomes. So fish and seafood can be very rich and dense in certain nutrients. So I've used here the idea of bivalve shellfish, but there's all sorts of different types of fish and seafood that have all got all sorts of types of nutrients. And in addition to this, eating healthy food is often thought of as better than a supplement because you're having a healthy dish all round and you're replacing maybe certain fatty foods, which is really important because obesity and being overweight in the UK is a big health risk as well during pregnancy. So 50% of women in the age of childbearing, which is like 18 to 45, I think in the UK they define it as, are overweight or obese. And that can have really great increased risks of miscarriage, of stillbirths, of increased future risks of children that are then overweight or struggle with diabetes. So having low fat meals, low fat proteins is super important. And fish and seafood can be sustainably farmed and can be sustainably sourced. It's a very diverse group when I talk about fish and seafood. Some are very sustainable, some are not very sustainable. Some farms are doing an excellent job at creating great nutritious foods, some aren't. So having the right foods is really, really important. So then I've kind of thought of my project in two ways. I first want to look at what we're currently eating in the UK and what this group of women, particularly women, but also parents and young parents and carers of young children are currently eating. So this is all from a government data set called the National Diet and Nutrition Survey. And as we can see, these are the NHS, these are the NHS recommended amounts. We're way below, and women are far below even overall adults. These are recommended because of the nutritional value of fish. So particularly things like omega-3s that are less commonly available in other foods. So we've got this great gap. And I thought it was really important to also look at what we're currently eating, because there are upper limits. So you aren't supposed to eat too much fish as well, but this isn't really a big common issue in the UK, as we can see, because we're eating so much less. And then I wanted to look at how income groups are affected, because low income groups are disproportionately affected generally in health outcomes. You're less likely to take your folic acid supplements if you're from the lowest decile of income. Overall health outcomes are generally worse in the UK. So I wanted to see how that translated to fish. And as we can see, whilst white fish and tuna is kind of okay, overall, we're eating far less fish, or women from low income households are eating far less fish. So then that was my first part of my research, and I've got more detailed figures on that. But I then wanted to kind of understand why. So we have some ideas, and there's lots of ideas of why people take different diets. But if this is the issue, and we're saying that income is a big issue, my first thought was, is fish just too expensive? Is it that it's not accessible to people? And so I wanted to understand why. So I've run a survey online, surveyed women from around the UK, asking them about their fish and seafood consumption, and asking them particularly to rank these factors as to why they don't eat more, or if they want to eat more. And maybe slightly surprisingly, I was expecting cost to be a larger factor than it was. Health concerns for both people, reasons for eating, wanting to eat more, or wanting to eat less, came out on top both times. So people were worried that they didn't want to eat too much because of the health concerns that it might be dangerous, but people were also worried that they weren't eating enough because of the health concerns around it not being healthy. And a big part of this, I think, is understanding of the government guidelines, particularly during pregnancy, as we found in the survey that pregnant mothers were the most concerned about their health around fish and seafood. So we are in this survey, I also ask people to correctly identify the NHS guidelines from a set of four similar looking options. And as you can see here, the success rate of picking out the correct option was very, very low, particularly around understanding of oily fish and tuna. And generally people were being overly cautious, which whilst it's great and we should all be healthy, it's leading to what, well, the data suggests that it's leading to people being more afraid of eating fish and seafood because they're a misunderstanding of the guidelines. So I've got a lot more to do to bring all this together, to get my final thesis together. But I really, for me, I think it's important to identify the nutritional fish and seafood that could help improve health, public health outcomes in the UK, but also to really quantify these barriers. Because I think that the government guidelines, the NHS guidelines can be improved. And I think the way they're communicated with women can be improved, and this could have a positive outcome on overall health. So thank you. That's my presentation. If you've got any questions or anything to talk about?
Megan, should we pass on to Jessa and then we open up questions? Yeah?
Let's stop sharing.
I hope that you can see my full screen. I haven't done Zoom in a little bit, so I'm a little bit stale, rusty. So I think Meg did an amazing job of just laying the groundwork and giving the background information. So that kind of saved me a few minutes there. Thank you, Meg. So again, my name is Jessica Dibayayan. I'm doing Seafood for Societal Health with Menk. She started around January and I started around April. So technically speaking, I'm still just a term in and just on my second term. So really cutting it halfway in my MPhil program. Really quickly about me and kind of like the motivation of where I'm at. Whoopee. There we go. So I grew up in the island province of Palawan in the Philippines. And because of that, I was really heavily exposed to the marine environment and the resources that come from it. Particularly, my mother grew up in a fishing community. My father's an avid seafood eater and my dog is a beach addict. So all in all, these reasons led me to the curiosity about the topic that I'm currently studying. I finished a bachelor's degree in biology and then I co-founded. So for the past 10 years, I've been actually working on working with indigenous peoples and local communities in forest conservation. So not really on food and on seafood. But recently, I also just finished the Master's in Conservation Leadership program here in Cambridge. And really what it unraveled for me is that it's just inevitable. There's really, as I mentioned earlier, there's just really a strong interdependence between our planet's health and the food that we consume. And so I'm just really, really incredibly grateful that we found this program that is uniquely just for me and Meg at this point. We're only the two students of this program called Seafood for Societal Health. And as Meg mentioned, if you look at the materials available online or even academically, people are discussing about meat, about vegetables, vegetarianism, veganism, but very little about seafood. So it was really an incredible experience so far in the past few months. Meg already did the groundwork for this, but for the purpose of this presentation, this will be my definition of seafood. Particularly for my research study, I'll be focusing more on fin fishes and also mollusk. And a little bit of a backgrounder. So currently the world is producing about 214 million tons of seafood, but this covers 178.4 million tons for the aquatic animals and then 36 million tons for algae. But again, I'm not going to touch on algae as it is another master's in itself, so to speak. And that's about the volume of the entire planet, of all the people in the world. So it is quite a massive volume that we're talking about. And if you're from me, who's coming from the Philippines, this can be some of your imagination when someone mentions the word seafood. You know, this is how diverse the markets are in the Philippines. In fact, these photos are actually taken from home. And this is how fish is processed and how seafood looks differently in the markets of my hometown. But I would also not blame you if these are some of the species that popped in your head when you when I mentioned seafood, when Meg and I were talking about seafood. This would not be a stranger for all of you, I'm guessing. So salmon, we've got cod, we got haddock, tuna, and prawns and shrimps. And if these are just the seafoods that you've had in mind, well, you are not alone, because roughly 50% of the seafood that the entire world consumes is actually just revolving around the families and this kinds of species. So we're thinking of, you know, seafood and diversity, but in fact, there's not a lot of diversity of seafood when it comes to the animals that we're actually consuming, with the species that we're actually consuming. And even around these five kinds of seafood, the thing is that a lot of their parts, a lot of the parts of the seafood are also underutilized or underconsumed, which means that it can lead to missed opportunities for nutritional benefits. It's also missed opportunities to actually feed more people with less extraction from our oceans. And of course, food waste. So again, just a quick review. It's shrimp, tuna, salmon, and other white fish like cod, haddock, that constitutes to over half of the seafood consumption globally. Here in the UK, we call them the big five, because these are the big five species that we are typically consuming. And I guess this would not come as a surprise then that fish fillets are the most commonly consumed cut, resulting in significant byproducts such as the head, the skin, the bones, the trimmings, the frames. And this actually leads to a lot of stuff that other regions can actually still consume. At the inception of my study, I was looking into comparing the Philippines and the United Kingdom and how we consume. But unfortunately, because of time constraints, I will also be focusing my work mostly here in the UK. So if you total that, about 30% are taken out of direct human consumption, which is kind of a big number if you do the math from my slides earlier. It is valorized for other products such as fish feed, fertilizer. Some of it goes to trash or are lost in the process, but 30% is still quite a significant opportunity for us to feed more people without taking more. So basically, the project is to identify approaches to promote the consumption of underutilized yet abundant seafood species and their parts to maximize positive impact for both people and the planet. So Meg already touched on this, which I'm really grateful for, because she already mentioned all those wonderful health benefits, essential vitamins, minerals, proteins, and fatty acids, but also almost half of the planet relies on the seafood sector. It overtakes coffee, it overtakes grain and chocolate as also the most traded food commodity in our planet. So it is, once we touch the topic of seafood, we're actually touching a lot of opportunities, even for not just for health, but also for livelihood of many people. However, as we know, business can simply no longer proceed as usual. Business as usual is just no longer possible. Our ocean is a crucial source of food, livelihood, and natural resources. But if we exploit it too much and engage in irresponsible practices, we risk draining these resources. And this could harm coastal communities, disrupt food chains, and negatively affect communities and economies that rely on sustainable marine industries. So for my study, as I mentioned before, I wanted to do kind of like a comparison between the Philippines and the United Kingdom, but this has evolved now into just focusing into the United Kingdom. I think Meg already explained that we're consuming very little when it comes to seafood here in general in the UK. So that's already something that I want to explore. I want to explore the drivers and barriers for those consumptions. And to do so, I'm employing two methodologies aside from traditional literature review. So I've been web scraping seafood recipes through seafood blogs that are most frequently visited by UK internet users. Internet is very powerful as far as UK consumers are concerned. One is that about nine in 10 UK residents have actually access to the internet. And several studies note that one in three people who see recipes online actually follow them. So whatever the representation of seafood in those recipes actually may have some influence on what people cook or what people prepare. So at the moment, I just finished the web scraping activities and I've had about over 8,000 recipes to go through. And I'm going to be sorting and looking this up into what is like the anatomy of those recipes. Is it going to be the big five, or are we actually supporting other kinds of seafoods that are available here in the UK and are more nutritionally dense and are better for the planet? Another thing is that I'm also doing an online survey using Qualtrics, targeting 500 UK residents and actually asking people what species and what cuts are they eating, how frequent are they doing it, and how people are motivated in the seafood that they consume. And also looking at barriers and threats. So somehow very similar to Meg, but also extending beyond the species of the fishes and other seafood that are consumed, but also looking into how willing are they, for example, to try fish belly, how willing are they to try the frames into potentially soup. Also looking at like what are the possible processes that can be done to the byproducts so that they would be able to try it. There's also a question there that kind of relates NDCs in seafood as we know, seafood has a big role to play in NDCs, in preventing NDCs. So I guess overall, my main motivation at the end of this project is that we think about seafood and our relationship with food and seafood when it comes to doing our grocery, when it comes to dining out, and even doing takeout. I kind of want to challenge people to go beyond their comfort zones of what are the big five and eating beyond the filet. There's really a lot of opportunities there for, you know, different kinds of culinary recipes that we might be missing out because we're just mostly eating the filet and the big five, you know, kind of considering, for example, in the middle of this slide, mussels are very abundant here in the UK, but are underutilized and very nutritionally dense. And, you know, some restaurants even offer oyster margaritas, for example. So there are really a lot of opportunities to try this underloved and underutilized seafood. I guess on that note, I'm going to end there. And just a little quick wrap up of everything I mentioned, you know, for us to be able to achieve all of the targets that we do want to achieve with our commitments with CBD, the Convention on Biological Diversity, I think it's about time that we actually think about food and rediscover and revisit our relationship with food to make that happen. And please, if you have the time, it only takes about 10 minutes, please scan the QR code in the slide to participate in the survey. And the QR code below are some of my other details if you want to learn more. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jessa and Megan. I knew about it already, but it's fantastic to hear more about it in an extended version. So thank you so much. And please send me again the survey so that I can circulate it again. That would be great. I've always thought seafood, for me, seafood is one specific thing, not the whole, as you said. For me, seafood is like prawns and shrimps, etc. But I guess it's nice to sort of hear that you sort of make it extended. I'd like to actually, before we open discussions, I think it will be interesting to ask Anna, Jakob, you know, and Roland and Serena, how much do you eat seafood? How much seafood do you eat? How often? That will be interesting. Quick survey among ourselves. And Abigail. Anyone who wants to go first? Quick answers. If you want to answer. Oh, okay. Well, Anna is vegan, so no seafood. Abigail? Oh, no. John? Yeah.
Yes. This is John. Yeah. Sorry, I was supposed to introduce myself earlier. I'm actually a nurse, and I'm interested on both of their topics because it's related to health. At the same time, I'm very well interested in nutrition. So, with regards to your question, we eat a lot of seafood. So we are actually from the Philippines, and our island nation comprises of less than 8,000 islands. Mm-hmm. So pretty much eat seafood every day, and we eat everything, as in we use the bones for stews,
the
we
head,
eat the eyes. Yeah. Sorry to discuss some of the people here, but we use everything, and we dry it, we cook it in every possible way we can. Mm-hmm. Roast, grill, put it in soups and everything, and it's really good for you, not really just nutrition wise. Mm-hmm. But what do you call this? Yeah. It's good mentally, it's good for the overall well-being. So hopefully that's a good thing.
Well, thank you John. Anyone else who just use the chat if you prefer to tell us how often, if you eat seafood, and if you do, how often you eat it. I have loads of questions, but given that I monopolize normally and abuse my chair position, I like to ask others first if they have any questions or comments. Please don't be shy. Orlando? And Jakob?
Hello.
Yes, Orlando.
Am I right to go?
No, yes, hello, go ahead, and then Jakob.
Thank you so much for those two interesting, really interesting talks. My background is computer science and in environmental risk, and particularly I'm focusing on how changing climate scenarios will affect the kind of marine ecosystems, in particular tropical coral reefs. So naturally, I'm really, really passionate and driven about how changes to those environments will affect people on the ground too. As you say, we in the world rely on it a huge amount for nutrition, but people more local to kind of small scale fisheries rely on it fundamentally for their day to days. As just a general, I'd be really interested in kind of learning perceptions of that kind of within local communities, any resources that I could be looking at, or anyone I could be talking to that. But thank you again for those two talks.
Thank you, Orlando. Maybe I'll put you in touch with Jessa and Megan and with the group. That'd be fantastic discussions, I think. Jakob?
Hello. I'm thinking about two issues. One is one refers to health, and this that even though clean fish and seafood, other types of seafood, can definitely have good health impacts, if it is seafood that comes from aquaculture, if it's stuffed with antibiotics, hormones, and so on, then I understand that it may rise valid health concerns. So I'm wondering how Megan addresses this, and how this is taken into consideration in the survey as well. And regarding what yes said, it's extremely interesting to see that you have thoughts about this sort of industrial ecology context of eating seafood. All the remnants, everything that is there that people in the West, in the global North, not necessarily eat. And of course, they have different ideas on what to do with it, like fish meal for aquaculture, or fish flour, again, for feeding animals mostly, not only fish, but also livestock. But how are you actually working on putting all of those pieces together, because it's really complicated. The recipes on one side, then all this industrial ecology context of. So I'm amazed. It's really extremely broad, and I'm wondering how you're trying to narrow things down. Thank you.
Thank you for this question, Jakob. Yeah, but I was going to say Meg just came from the Aquacultura conference. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was recently at Aquaculture Europe, where they were talking about safety around aquaculture. I do think at the moment, everything is in line with the guidelines that are recommended from the science. In order to sell fish, you have to meet or you have to get the correct certificates. I think it's changing. And I think there was a lot of conversations about how do we, for example, in the UK, you're not supposed to eat, when you're pregnant, you're not supposed to eat smoked fish that hasn't been smoked properly, or raw fish or raw shellfish for risk of food poisoning and bacteria. I was speaking to people who were saying, well, that risk doesn't exist because we're in a controlled farm. So we know there's no bacteria because it's a controlled tank, unlike taking it from the ocean. But I do think from my survey and from what I've been looking at, already part of the problem is that it's too overcomplicated. And by saying you can eat farm fish or you can't eat farm fish, or you have to read the label and see where it's from, because if it's from Norway, it's clean. And even then, every farm is different. And as you said, you're just trusting that a farm is doing what it's saying to get the labels. I think keeping up with monitoring is really important, because aquaculture is growing so fast and so expansively. Unlike meat production on farms, it didn't exist in the same way it exists now 50 years ago. So I do think it's interesting. I do think whilst there are additional risks with using, say, antibiotics, there are positives that can come from fish farming, such as like a more controlled environment, you can control pollutants, but it is changing. And I think it is really interesting, and I think it needs to be monitored. But I would say it is safe at the moment, in that it has to go through all the correct checks, EU checks, in the UK anyway. Well, not, it's a big conversation in Brexit and aquaculture, but
yeah.
But Jess is probably better for the second half of that question.
I was gonna say a PhD would do it, because it's very massive, to be completely honest with you. I really wanted to do a whole lot more beyond what I mentioned, but for now it's really just finding the few crumbs, the clue of crumbs of clue, or whatever comes first, and then slowly building up from that. And I think even though these are just tiny crumbs, it's a good conversation to have now, as early as now, or maybe as late as now, depending on your optimism. As Orlando was mentioning earlier, you know, the environmental risk, climate risk, we can no longer expand land. Like, as far as agriculture is concerned, as far as like rearing cattle is concerned, we can no longer expand land. So the next really massive source of food for the planet is really the sea and aquaculture, basically. So these are good conversations to have now, early on. So like what Asmet said, we can actually help in developing policy or influencing products that may come out that answers or responds to the needs of the people in the community. And I hope that kind of makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jess. Jakob, do you want to follow up, or you have further questions? No. I wanted to ask you a quick question, unless there are more questions or comments, so I can bombard you with my long list. Well, one question is actually more like a suggestion. Have you, or are you going to, especially if you sort of expand, perhaps if you go on to a PhD, or hopefully, maybe looking also at trade and international international law and international agreements, because obviously that has a massive impact on what gets fished and what gets imported, exported, etc. So really looking at, you know, I'm looking obviously at the interdisciplinarity of this of the topic, and then also involving perhaps psychology, you know, the psychology department, to sort of see how consumers think and react, and what best techniques perhaps you could use to develop the surveys and tap onto the consumers from different points of view. That's one. I also wanted to ask in terms of the sustainability. You know, I keep being surprised that tuna is still number one ingredient and suggested fish to consume, and is one of the most unsustainable fish. So how can we move away from this sort of, you know, traditional way of consuming the few big five, as you mentioned, and really go towards different types of fish?
I can answer really quickly, Meg, if that's okay. I guess kind of just banking on like the last few of your points, Francesca. As I mentioned, my background is in conservation. I actually did a training with RARE on theory of change. And this is kind of like what I followed in designing my master's and really looking into its knowledge, what are people's knowledge, adding it to people's attitudes, where finding out where people are doing their interpersonal interactions, where are people talking, is it the radio, the internet, their local fishmongers, and then from there identifying the threats and motivations, and then eventually leading to the conservation outcome. So a little bit of my paper touches on that theory of change into achieving kind of like the conservation food outcome that I want. And I also do want to, I really appreciate your comment on trade and how it's really interwoven in there. I was just looking into the interaction between Norway, for example, who's collecting the meat of cod and salmon, but then sending the frames, the head and the bones in Lagos, where they use it as stockfish. And so it will be really interesting to see, like in theory, you know, if you look at it without looking about other things, they're wasting their byproducts, but in reality, they're sending it to other countries. So there's really a lot of that are in our food systems that are, to be quite honest, a very massive learning opportunity for me, because I haven't really looked into these things before.
Yes, I think we certainly need to tackle that aspect as well, and it would be really interesting to perhaps get, you know, find funding or a big grant and create, you know, a fish an interdisciplinary seafood project and see what can be done from so many different angles. Any more questions or comments?
I think just to slightly add to that one as well, I think there are like ways we can do it in the UK that aren't completely obvious, like particularly in the UK at a lot of the conferences and things, people are quite annoyed about the quality of seafood, especially shellfish in the UK in comparison to the rest of Europe. And that affects then people buying it. Or if you have one bad experience of how it's stored in a supermarket and you get food poisoning, you're probably not going to eat it again. Your friends probably aren't going to eat it again. But I do think there are things that can be done. Like salmon is now a very trendy food and popular food. Norwegian salmon industry is doing very well, but it wasn't anywhere near the same way 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I do think opinions can be changed, but they're also somebody in our group, all those ideas around of like, how do we diversify fish cakes, or how do we take processed foods, which might not be the best option, but can we, instead of having a cod cake, could you make 10% of that mussel, for example, something else that
David is doing,
that doesn't actually change the taste but will make it more sustainable. Can you fortify those muscles so they're more nutritious? I think there are a lot of ideas around about how you can alter diets that aren't completely like, we should all try this brand new food that you've never seen before, that you don't know how to prepare, like nudge people towards different foods, which I think is a really interesting idea.
Yes, definitely. And we should talk and see what we can come up with. Oh, Orlando's back, but I think we are about to probably wrap up. Yeah, I think it's a very complex and fascinating area. It would be really good to find a way of discussing it further. And I think the distribution, the supply is also plays a massive role in this as well. But, you know, I've always been surprised that the UK being an island, and yet there's so little fish that gets consumed. There's fish, you know, fish and chips, but other than that, and there's no huge amount. So yes, we had to sort of think of, are we playing more on the consumers, more on the government policies? Again, you know, it's a bit of a chicken and egg in a way, right? But yeah, you know, I actually used to eat a lot more fish in the past, and one of the reasons is the sustainability. The reason why I'm reducing it massively is the sustainability. So that's certainly one aspect that needs to be addressed properly. But do you have any more comments? Anything to add? And what's the rest of your group is doing? How do you sort of all fit together in a way? Because it's so obviously there are a few of you now, which is great.
We laugh a bit sometimes that we're not that related, other than the fact that it's fish and seafood. So I don't know, one guy's looking at mass mortality events of mussels and trying to identify why they take place. Someone else is looking at urban aquaculture and growing bivalve shellfish inland, and how that would work, if it would work. There's all sorts of things. We have a lab meeting now. We're kind of looking at the food consumer side of it. Yeah, lots of shellfish, yeah. Mussels, people.
It would be really great to connect with everyone on the call. Food is something that's not really black and white, you know, like when we talk about food, we're talking about, as you mentioned, Francesca, it's like psychology, and food is about choices, and food is about the planet and things like that. So we really appreciate everyone's help into achieving the goals that we want to achieve as far as the topic is concerned. Yeah, thank you.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Jessa and Megan. I'll talk to you separately, but we should definitely come up with an article and distribute that. Wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining us. There will not be a seminar next week, but there will be one on the 27th. So we will circulate again, you know, all the details, etc. Thank you so much. Thank you again. Have a good weekend.